Hey, kids, we're a couple of annoyed grunt boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Dancing away my hunger pangs, moving my feet so my stomach won't hurt. I'm kind of like Jesus, but not in a sacrilegious way.
That's right, where the podcast explores the American animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the newest ones when they're available. Why do we do it like that? Well, an entity known as the Wheel of Random has trapped us and forced us to watch things in such a manner. I say we because I can't do this on my own, and I'm one annoyed grunt boy named Steve, and with me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy, Craig. Hey, Craig, how you doing this week?
Doing great. Get up in the morning, walk around, do those things. I love walking. It's so much fun.
Walking is a pleasure that, you know, when you don't have it, you kind of miss it.
Are you saying you take walking for granted, Steve?
I'm saying I am, because I recently had an old man condition where my foot just decided to not allow me to walk, and it sucks. However, the silver lining of that is it has allowed me a lot of free time to watch TV. And if you listened to us last week, Craig set forth a challenge for me, or a recommendation, wasn't really a challenge.
Watch the Super Friends, the challenge of Super Friends.
Exactly. You suggested that I watch the Peacock show Ted, based on the Seth MacFarlane movies, featuring Seth MacFarlane as the titular bear himself.
You know, it's funny. We've been on pod this week. I got no texts from you. Even like before we record, we talk like a half an hour before we hit the record button on the show. And you didn't even mention anything about Ted. So I'm like, oh, he's probably forgot. Didn't mention it. So I'm very curious because I don't know what you're going to say. I'm surprised.
Craig, I'll tell you that I watched all 7 episodes available.
I have 2. I actually finished episode 7, I think, last night.
Oh, wow. Also say that in the past, I've been skeptical. I'm not the biggest Seth MacFarlane fan. I did watch Family Guy when it first came out, and I liked it, and then it got a little tired for me. And then as his other shows have come out, I thought I'd give them a try, and they'd usually last for, you know, a few episodes, but then I get sick of it, and I would kind of, you know, say that this isn't for me. And so I was, you know, a little skeptical going in, but I am happy to say that I loved the show. I think that it is really well written. It's a very tight, snappy show with a great sense of sitcom-iness without leaning too hard on being a trope of a sitcom. If that makes sense, like, they make a plot that is a classic plot of a sitcom, but it doesn't feel like they're trying to be too tongue-in-cheek about it. They don't lean too hard on being a 90s retro show. They do make jokes about certain things that are more modern now, but I think that they do it in a way that isn't too try-hard or too over-the-top. But really, I think what really makes the show so great is the casting. Everybody in the show is just perfectly cast. I think the main character is so good at playing a teen who feels like a real teen.
That's Max Burkholder.
Yes, Max Burkholder as John is so good at being kind of like a lonely, dorky teen who knows his lot in life. And just like him getting high with Ted is so earnest and real. Susan is such a wonderfully tragic character.
Alana Ubak? Ubak, yeah. So you say her last name?
Yeah, Ubak. She's so good in it. She reminds me of like a classic like SCTV actress in the way that she's able to evoke that emotion. Scotty Grimes is so wonderfully unlikable in the perfect way. Like, he's such the masshole Boston guy that is like, I know people like that from Boston, and he just covers that well. And also, Blair, played by Gloria Wigham, she is so good in it. She, like, is the heart of the show to me, and she humanizes other people just by being around, and I thought that she's very good. The writing is really, really on point. The jokes are very funny without being too mean-spirited, which is something that Seth MacFarlane can sometimes do. My only complaint about the show is the fact that the interstitial music is based on the theme song, which is a very classic kind of 40s swing music, and it just reminds me of Family Guy.
Well, yeah, when the interstitial happens and they're showing the house, I'm like, it's Family Guy.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Yeah.
But that's what makes it a fun, you know, callback sitcom-y trope.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the casting, you know, usually there's a TV show that comes out and you're like, well, I like these characters. I can do without. But like, you know, you would think that the Georgia Wingham, who plays Blair, who's the voice of reason on the show, usually those characters people can find annoying, especially if they're played by like a younger actor.
Yeah.
I'm kind of annoyed by this, but her character gets to shine as being the voice of reason, but also being funny.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the mom character is just so good because it's so sad.
Yeah.
And like a main character, you go and watch the movies because, you know, I'm a big Marky Mark fan, but like he's way better than Marky Mark as mm-hmm. the main character of John. And Scott Grimes, who's friends with Seth and he's on the Orville as well, but like he's just another great actor. This is, yeah, the show, surprisingly, seven tight episodes. Also, one of my complaints as a sitcom is they're always 22 minutes. They say, screw it, let's make a whole 45-minute sitcom, like episodes, yeah. You know, like time-wise, like just do it whatever length you want.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one of your favorite episodes, I got to say that Christmas episode was well done because there's a character that it's so deplorable that you're just like, this is the worst character of all time, you know? You know what I'm mm-hmm. talking about, the Christmas and the, I don't want to spoil, but. And then, but even that character, like, you come around and you feel bad for them.
Yeah.
That one, and I got to say I think it's probably the second episode where they get revenge on the bully.
That was so brilliant, just because they genuinely care about his well-being.
Yeah.
Also so tragic. The Halloween episode was one of my top ones, too. The trope of the horny professor and what they yep. did with that is so brilliant.
How cute is Ted as an Ewok, though?
Oh, yeah. So good. I think the one where Susan becomes a teacher is also very good. Just because, like, when she goes off on that girl. Or when Ted goes off on that girl, I thought that was just so well written.
It's brilliant because, you know, it's that typical, like, rich, pretty girl bully character that you see so many times on TV shows. And then, but Ted calling her out, kind of shaming her too, like is like not appropriate and it's not cool. But mm-hmm. the fact that Susan talks to her as a normal human being to like find out who this character is, then like that character becomes redeemed. That's what the show's about, is like redemption and just taking those tropes that we see all the time. And that's what's kind of alluding to last week is normally Ted calling that girl off, you know, telling that girl off, that's where you would end it. But the fact that Seth writing this like goes one further, like, no, let's not bully people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like anti-bullying in this episode that, or this show that's so much about bullying, you know. Mm-hmm. I hope it gets renewed. And I hope they have 25,000 more episodes.
I agree. And I think also it speaks to this weird thing that I've noticed, that Peacock is an amazing streaming service because their original programming really is adept at capturing the emotions of the current day. And I think this goes back to NBC as a whole. Like, I know that we're a Simpsons podcast, so yay Fox and yay Disney Plus. But you think about the 80s and you had NBC's lineup of The Cosby Show, which, you know, say what you will about Bill Cosby and, you know, rightfully so, but that show was very, spoke to like the American family at the time. And then you had like Family Ties and stuff like that, that were all very American family in the 80s, like the nuclear family. And then in the 90s, you had You're Mad About You, Your Seinfeld, Your Friends, Your Wings, these like workplace kind of reconstructed families. And that went on into the early 2000s with The Office and Scrubs. And I think what Peacock is doing so well now is describing this like horrible world that we live in now of like people who are in more like economic strife and struggling with life a bit more. And you have shows like Killing It and Twisted Metal and Poker Face and Ted, where you have, you know, lower middle class people to, you know, low class people who are just trying to get by and trying to understand the world. And I think that is so true of the world that we live in now, because it's not all glitz and glamour for most people. They're just trying to understand the world and make sense of it. And so I'm just impressed by Peacock and their ability to show programming like this. And I think Ted was such a pleasant surprise. So thank you, Craig, for recommending it. And I recommend it as well.
You should thank Seth MacFarlane. Yeah, he's here with us right now. Thanks, guys. That's my worst Seth MacFarlane. Wait, hold on. Seth is here, but he's only going to speak in his Peter Griffin voice to say thank you. Is that okay?
Alrighty. Hey, Seth.
Yeah.
I just want to say that you have written a smart and sensitive and deep TV show, and I want to thank you for making it.
Lois.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Peter.
Oh, do you want to do Stewie's voice too? Okay.
Excellent. Oh, wait, no, he doesn't say that.
So, Steve, you're saying like Peacock. Remember the slogan for Peacock or for NBC was always must see TV?
Mm-hmm.
Is their slogan must stream TV?
I think it might be, yeah.
Is it really, though? Like, it should be.
I actually don't think it is, but it really should be, because, yeah, it is.
All right. Let's call Brandon Tartikoff up and pitch that slogan.
Okay, I will.
Okay, thanks. But they did, unfortunately, they did cancel the Saved by the Bell reboot, which is actually pretty good, too, so.
Yeah, I did watch some of that. That was good, but. Yeah,
they should bring that back, but call it Saved by the Bell, the new class.
But anyways. Greg, we're not here to talk about the NBC or the Peacock. We're here to talk about The Simpsons and the times when they aired, such as all the way back to 2001, March 4th specifically. What were we watching in the box office?
Well, Steve, I'm sure you were in the cinemas because you are a Brad Pittophile. you're a Pitt head.
And pitiful.
And a Julia Roberts blaster. I don't know. Those were the movie, right? The Mexican, they were in that movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those two non-Mexicans.
I never saw the movie, so sorry.
Yeah, no, I don't think I did either.
I don't think they're supposed to be Mexican, Steve.
I guess not. But there is one titular Mexican, I assume.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Steve, I'm sure I was, 2001? Jeez, that's how old that movie is? Wow.
Yeah.
Steve, I was on LimeWire downloading like some country songs and some Billboard hot songs and rock songs. So what do you think I was downloading?
Well, the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 was Stutter by Joe featuring Mystikal.
No, I wasn't downloading that one.
Okay, well, maybe, just maybe you were getting your Hot Rock and Alternative Hot 100, which was Know Your Enemy by Green Day.
That's not from the American Idiot album, is it?
I do believe that it is, actually.
So I was probably actually listening to that song on my CD player, because I actually purchased that CD, Steve.
What a good music fan you are.
Yeah. But surely I was listening to a country singer that was definitely alive at the time.
You probably were, and don't call me Shirley, but the number one song on the Country Hot 100 was You Shouldn't Kiss Me Like This by the late Toby Keith. And maybe, you know, maybe all those songs weren't for you, so you were rocking out to the number one hot dance electric song, which is Scream and Shout by Will.i.am and Britney Spears.
I sure was, Steve.
Good song.
Two people, Will.i.am and Britney Spears. R.I.P. Toby Keith. Now who's going to play at Trump's inauguration in 2024 now that he's dead?
And there's still Lee Greenwood and
Kid Rock.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Keith did perform at the Trump's inauguration in 2016.
That's right.
Probably Taylor Swift will do the inauguration for Trump.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. Probably Taylor Swift. Green Day. I think Green Day will do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, everyone here, Britney Spears, Will.i.am, I'm sure they'll do it.
Paycheck's paycheck, man.
Yeah. And there'll be the Mexican there. No, there won't be, because he'll build that wall. So.
Right.
Okay, Jesus. Not a political podcast, Steve. We're a Simpsons podcast. Let's go and do that.
All righty. Let's talk about today's episode, Hungry, Hungry Homer. So as a result of becoming a Good Samaritan, Homer discovers that the Springfield Isotopes baseball team are planning to move to Albuquerque. So he decides to go on a hunger strike. But how long will it last? I don't know.
Probably 22 minutes.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, let's take a break, watch those 22 minutes, and we'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're talking about Hungry, Hungry Homer, the 15th episode of the 12th season. It originally aired on March 4th, 2001. It is episode 263 in the show's run. Your nerd code is CABF09. It was written by John Swartzwelder. Your director is Nancy Cruz. And the showrunner is Mike Scully.
Hey, Steve.
Mm.
It's also our 263rd episode.
Whoa. That's crazy.
So if we did this podcast proper, like every podcast review show does, which, you know, start with season one, episode one, because that's, you know, the smart, right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
going in order, we would have caught up to this very episode. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. That is amazing. We'd have had 12 years of content covered.
We would have been like the most successful Simpsons podcast by now.
It's true. And yet we're clearly not.
No one likes us anymore.
Anymore.
Well, look who it is, Steve. Old Johnny Schwartzwelder, the old Schwartzy, the old weld man himself. And he's like 74 right now, Steve. Oh, his birthday was like a week ago from our record date.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, happy birthday, John.
Well, thank you, Steve.
That's the best John Schwartzwelder impression I've ever heard.
I still like the one photo of him that's on the wiki. It's still just that. The quality's so bad, it almost looks like that one picture of Lee Harvey Oswald where he's like holding at the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe Schwartzwelder actually did assassinate JFK.
Seems possible. I mean, Kennedy was a Democrat.
Do you think that friend of the show, Bill Oakley, ever is in contact, like, is ever in contact with Schwartzwelder? Like, do they talk?
I think they probably do, but Bill Oakley's not allowed to talk about it. But they probably talk, like, every week. Like, they go to, like, a fast food place. They go to Arby's together, I think.
And they get kicked out because Schwartzwelder, like, just lights up the cigarette.
Exactly.
And, like, sir, this is Arby's. You can't smoke in here. It's like, well, I will.
So one time where that's not dorky to say, sir, this is an Arby's.
Well, you know, he is from Seattle, Washington. So maybe, but he doesn't live Pacific Northwest. He's, but over, the last we've heard, he's, what, like, somewhere over in the East?
Yeah.
Is he still writing his little book, Steve?
So condescending, but yes, he is. I think he released his latest one in 2020. But, you know, it takes a long time to write, you know, a book that's 120 pages. So I think he'll probably have another one out soon in the next decade or so.
How do you think he handled the good old coronavirus, the pandemic?
Oh, boy. I imagine that he just stayed at home, sat in his booths, and was very reasonable about it.
Do you think he's watching the news on January 6th of 2021? And he's like, I wish I could be there.
Yeah, but who knows what side he would have been on.
Right. We're not implying anything. We just have a feeling, right?
Yeah.
Look, Steve, God, I still think we ever do the Patreon for our two listeners, that just all of his episodes would be fun Patreon exclusive.
I think so, yeah.
I actually watched Bart the General and The Call of the Simpsons the other day. I was like, I felt like just putting on season one of The Simpsons in the background. And I still delight in the first season. I know it's, you know, obviously trying to find its footing at that time, but some things in it, I was like, I kind of wish we got on a mic and talked about this episode, you know, some of those episodes.
It's been a while since I've seen Bart the General, but it always stands in my mind as being an incredibly solid episode that kind of really was the one when I was a kid that really hooked me in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I agree. I think that episode. Also, Bart the Genius, like the second episode, I think is like a solid episode. That's when it was still called Bart and the Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of fun with that one. But Schwartzwelder, we still got a few more episodes of his that we haven't reviewed for this podcast. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the ones we have reviewed, we have Take My Wife Sleaze, The Mansion Family, which is, we love that one. Kill the Alligator and Run, which controversial at the time, but we enjoy it now.
Mm-hmm.
Simpson Safari, which I don't think we do enjoy.
It's true.
The Sweetest of Pooh, The Frying Game, and The Regina Monologues, which was his last episode. So we still got Mr. Spritz Goes to Washington and the I Am Furious Yellow, The Lastest Gun in the West, Hancock and Burns in Love, The Computer War Men's Shoes, and A Tale of Two Springfields, which I'm looking forward to Tale of Two Springfields.
Yes. One thing about Take My Wife Sleaze, that is the one where Homer joins a biker gang. And so, spoiler to what this episode is going to be, it's about Homer going on a hunger strike. So that idea was originally thought of by Al Jean, who pitched it, and it was going to be about Homer wanting a motorcycle and going on a hunger strike until he gets it. That idea turned into Take My Wife's Sleaze, but the hunger strike thing didn't happen until season 12, which we're about to talk about.
Well, should we just talk about it now?
Sure.
All right.
So we'll start out with a chalkboard gag. We have Bart writing, Temptation Island was not a sleazy piece of crap.
So the class was, Grubop was like, I stayed home and watched Temptation Island. And then Bart's like, that's a sleazy piece of crap show. And she's like, no, it's not, Bart. You're saying after, write that on the billboard. Yeah. Bart was right. It is a sleazy piece of crap.
Yeah. Back for those of you who are don't know and are under the age of, you know, 40, it was a reality show on the Fox network, which can do no wrong. And it was basically about these four couples who are stranded on an island and encouraged to cheat on each other.
Oh, how far we have come in reality shows.
Sure.
At least now we have, I think it's on Fox, the Bachelor show, but he's a farmer and all the ladies have to learn to farm to win his
heart. Oh, that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never watched Temptation Island, nor do I watch any reality shows.
Unless it's competition-based, I don't really care. And like, I mean, like, you know, I'll watch like cooking shows or something, but...
They should make a cooking dating show.
Ooh.
Where you... This is just off the top of my head. It's all chefs, and they all cook for a date. And the date tries like three meals, and whatever meal that she liked the best, they go on the date with that chef.
I like that.
Yeah, that sounds easy enough, right?
Yeah.
Like
Hungry for Love.
Oh, geez, look, that's the perfect name. Okay, it's who do we know in Food Network, Steve? Do we have Guy Fieri's number?
It's blocked for me.
Oh, man. I think it's just 1-800-FLAVOR-TOWN. What about Ted Allen? Do we have his phone number?
I think so somewhere, but it was chopped.
Wow. I thought you were going to do something different, so I'm going to do it. Steve, I see your phone. I have it right here. I have a T. Allen. Why don't you give it a call?
Okay.
All right, there we go. That's the joke I was going to go for.
Okay, that's much better.
Yeah. Hungry for Love. I love this idea. Would it be like, they also have to like, they don't see the chef either.
Right.
So it would be like Chopped. Like there's an appetizer course, a main course, and then a dessert. And so the person who's trying to find the date also like get them really like fat, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, God, I ate like 17 meals today. But then it's like, then you're expected to cook for them. Is that the date?
That's true. Like maybe they can go out to dinner
at the chef's like restaurant that they own.
Exactly.
Yeah. That'd be funny. Yeah. Cause then like the contestant could be like, here's the things I like. Cause they have to also try something adventurous that they've never tried before.
That's true.
So anal. Okay. Steve, we had a couch gag, and it's the family leaping into the room, all dressed in white gis, or karate uniforms for you dum-dums out there. And it's not karate gi like gi butter, although. Hey, they're all black belts too, Steve. They're the best.
Good job, guys.
They're the best around. Nothing's ever going to keep them down. So they chop the couch into pieces while Homer does like a spinning kick and clicks on the TV with the remote. This is the second time, Steve, that this couch gag has been used. The first being season 11, Cytosaur Galactica, which we discussed on our 239th episode back of August 2023.
Wow.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember the couch gag, but I do remember the episode because it's the worst episode ever.
But it's
not. But
yeah.
Yeah. But this episode begins, as it always does, with the Simpsons watching TV. There's an ad on the screen that asks the viewer if they're sick of ordinary-shaped amusement parks. Homer, in the middle of choking Bart, sorry Bill Wheaton, flies, "Am I ever?" So the commercial has just the place for him.
Then be the first family on your block to visit Blocko-Land. The amusement park made entirely of Blocko brand assembly fun blocks. So, how much did you love Blocko-Land?
It was all right, I guess.
Kids, how would you like to go to Blocko-Land?
Meh.
But the TV gave me the impression that...
We said meh. M-E-H. Meh.
Well, I'd like to go.
That kid, too, is like, how much did you like Blocko-Land? It was all right.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of remember that joke, but that's solid. Like, why would the advertisement have a kid? And then we get the famous Bart and Lisa meh. Is this kind of like, I know they've probably said it before, but is this really the pop culture awakening of meh? Because I really kind of remember when Bart said, I said meh used to be something I would say. And I think it's because...
Exactly. Meh and yoink are probably the two biggest Simpsons words that I use on a regular basis. Because of this episode, it actually ended up in dictionaries. But it was first used in 1994 as the season 6 episode, Sideshow Bob Roberts.
Social Twitter loves the word meh, and he heard the word from an advertising writer named Howie Krakow back in the 70s, and he thought it was the funniest word that he'd ever heard, meh. And so, yeah, I would say that this is kind of like genesis of where it became popular.
What's the funniest word you've ever heard? It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But that's more of
vowels.
Yeah. No vowels. Yeah, I don't know if I have a favorite word. It's like the, isn't that one of the questions that that one dead dude would ask celebrities on his TV show?
Yes. James Lipton?
Yeah, famous Lipton.
Yeah.
The heir of the Lipton.
Himself.
Yeah. it was like, what's your favorite curse word, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what you want, yeah. I don't know, I think woozle wuzzle?
Yeah, makes me laugh.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I think you need to think about your favorite word and then get back to us next week, okay?
Will do.
Okay. Marge asks if Maggie is interested in going to Blockoland. And of course, she squeals with delight because Blockos are for kids. Okay, guys? Buckling herself up in her car seat to the family station wagon. It is cute until they hear the car starting, which is really funny.
Yeah.
Are the keys in the car when they leave? Or does she like grab them?
I assume she hopped away and grabbed them off the kitchen table or wherever they were.
But it wouldn't surprise me if Homer just leaves the car keys in the car.
That's true.
Or maybe Marge.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she's bringing in the groceries. Maybe she's bringing in her new vacuum. I forgot to keep it.
Love the vacuum.
Yeah, that's her tool. That's her weapon of choice.
So excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume that maybe Homer also is the type of guy who would leave his keys in the house door, like when he walks in. You know, you open up, you know, but I don't know. But later, at the entry to Blockoland, the Simpsons arrive via shuttle, which happens to be built out of Blocko blocks and features square wheels, creating quite a bumpy ride. I just love that. Inside, a Block dressed as a cowboy, who looks kind of like the Twinkie the Kid mascot, shakes the hand of a young boy. Behind him, an Abe Lincoln Blocko mascot practices his version of the Gettysburg Address, when he trips and gets connected to the cowboy Blocko mascot. So an employee uses a crowbar to separate them.
You know, Legos have wheels for their Lego pieces. They don't need block wheels.
It's true.
But this, of course, is Blocko, not Lego. We'll be corrected later.
It might be an inferior product, but
yeah,
it is blockier.
The, was it Mega Blocks, the inferior Lego?
Yeah, and is Duplo just Legos for kids, or is that a separate company?
No, Duplo's owned by Lego. It's the baby Lego.
But yeah, Mega Blocks is the worst of the two, I feel.
Well, it's because Lego didn't patent the connecting toy block, so that's why you can have, knockoff Legos.
Mm-hmm.
Blockos, Mega Blocks, whatever, yeah. And then, like, if you go to, like, a Dollar Tree, they'll have, like, not even Mega Blocks, it'll just be called, like, Blocks, you know?
Yeah.
But don't ever mix your Legos with Mega Blocks or non-Lego pieces. It's gross, guys. It's gross.
It's just wrong.
They're really the Oreo cookies of Legos, Mega Blocks. Because, you know, Lego would be Hydrox, because Hydrox was the first.
Of course. Yes.
And we all prefer Hydrox over Lego. I mean, over Oreos.
I love Hydrox. I also prefer, when it comes to eating and dipping in milk, I prefer Hydrox over Legos.
How many Legos as a kid did you put in your mouth?
Oh, most of them.
Did you ever take like the 6x1 like white pieces and pretend they were cigarettes?
Sure. I also like to chew on the rubber tires.
And like real rubber tires.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, if you had a set of Radio Goodyears, I'd go to town.
Yeah. I just put together a fun little Lego set not too long ago. It was Indiana Jones, the Temple of the Well of the Souls one. That was fun.
Ooh.
Yeah. You could play with it too. You knock a thing down and like a body, like a mummy comes out. And there's a lot of snakes. Oh. I'm 41, by the way. No, I mean, they market Legos not to adults, so it's fine. It's fine.
It's all good.
See, what was the last Lego set you put together?
Probably, it's been a while. Probably, though, the Simpsons house or the Quickie Mart.
Way to be on brand.
I know.
If this was an Indiana Jones podcast, then I would have been on brand with my Lego set. And also, 263 episodes of a Lego, or of an Indiana Jones podcast seems kind of a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you can do young Indiana Jones, maybe some of the novels, but
yeah.
I feel like there's not quite that much to do.
Well, there's all the old Marvel and Dark Horse comic books and some video games.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do the math later, and I'll figure out how many episodes you could get out of an Indiana Jones podcast, okay?
Okay. Get back to us next week. Let us know.
Yeah. Would we also count the fan films? That's probably where we'd be at right now. Like, all right, we're going to review an Indiana Jones fan film.
Mm-hmm.
Probably review the porn parody Indiana Jones, Indiana Bones.
Temple of Poon.
Yeah. We really should review the Simpsons porn parody, shouldn't we?
Save it for the Patreon.
Or, you know, episode 300 is coming up.
Oh, that's true. We need to do something.
Should we do it live in studio, record for that episode, do a watch-along audio commentary?
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Maybe we can rent out a theater and make it a live event and have everybody watch porno with us.
I'm thinking we find a local church and show it there.
There you go.
Yeah. Jesus won't be the only one coming.
I was going to say, he won't be the only one risen, but yours is better, so.
We'll keep yours. Well, Steve, let's go back to Blockoland. In another section of the amusement park, a girl goes down a slide built out of Blocko pieces. And ow, 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 ow. She bumps, goes down each piece, right? But then when she hits the ground, just like a giddy, goes, wee! Very cute. Meanwhile, the Simpsons check out the different regions of Blockoland, such as Rectangle Land, Cube Country, and of course, Marge picks her favorite, Squaresville.
So Homer looks into a mirror, which makes him look like he's made of blocks. He laughs at his image and says in a monotone voice, "I am a robot. Do what I say." And then he looks at another mirror, which makes him appear short, squat, and blocky. He laughs again and says, once again, in a robot voice, "I am a washing machine. Do what I say." This episode already has has already had four really solid jokes, and I'm very happy.
Yeah, it's just so dumb. In the
guy,
of course. But the I'm a robot, do what I say, but I'm a washing... Like, I'm assuming he's just going to say the same thing, because I don't remember this joke, but I am a washing machine, do what I say. We're going to an arcade now with Bart and Nelson playing Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Did Nelson... What's he doing there?
I assume that he snuck in, because I don't think his mom would, take him there, because that's... You know, I don't want to.
I think we're shaming. Yeah,
I know, and I don't want to do that. And maybe his mom did, have enough money.
Maybe he's on a date with Martin.
There you go.
So after Bart threatens to attack Nelson in the face, Nelson gives him an uppercut—not him, but the robots—sending the robot head flying. And then Arcade Inflate winces this and says, "You knocked his block off." Of course, referencing the classic toy commercial, and then a security guard takes Nelson away, which again, very funny.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of the Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
You know, that seems like the exact kind of thing that my parents would buy me for Christmas in the hopes that I would someday have friends. But I don't think I ever had a Rock'em Sock'em Robots. They look like fun, though. Did you ever have ones?
Nope, because I didn't have friends either, so.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
We should have got one to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking I probably have played it at some point.
Yeah, I feel like I had a weird, branded one. Or I remember playing with one that was, it might have been, a Street Fighter 2 branded one, where it was, Ken and Ryu, but it was basically just Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
They should have a Simpsons one. I'm surprised they probably do. If it's Bart and Homer.
So... The Simpsons then visit the Blockoland cafeteria, which offers a build-your-own-meal buffet station featuring items such as ham, cheese, bread, and veggies, which is oddly spelled V-E-G-I-E. Homer is proud of his creation he built, a healthy apple. Lisa points out that it is actually just made out of ham cubes, but Homer loves his shiny new apple, and he polishes it on his shirt, leaving a large grease stain.
Did they spell veggies wrong for, as a joke?
I don't think so, but I don't know.
Very funny about the greasy ham on his shirt. Which, Steve, here you go. I made you a ham apple.
Mm. It is hammy.
I could just imagine it being, because your hands are touching and putting together, how slimy your hands are. And it's not lukewarm ham because of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's my fingers, and putting my fingers all over Steve's face. Lick them, lick them. Ew, he did. Gross, Steve.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, so
bad.
Yeah. Homer and Lisa go on a boat ride surrounded by a block of figurines. It's kind of like the, would be like Small World. No, it's more like the, what's the other one in Disneyland? The boat ride where it's.
Like the Safari Cruise.
Or no, I was thinking more like the Storyteller one where it's,
oh.
It's like for little kids. Like you go on the, you know, it tells all those little fairy tales in small form.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kid's one, you know. Anyways, Homer finally understands the theme of this park. Everything's made of blocks, even the water. So then he reaches out of the boat and flings some blue blocks onto Lisa's face, and Lisa's very much not happy about that. Then an employee tells him to stop splashing, and Homer asks, what's he going to do about it? And then the worker leaves his booth and walks over to the water, on the water. He's like Jesus. And Homer tries to do the same, but it falls in the block of water, nearly drowning. He swims out and pulls up his shirt to reveal four just like black blocks on his belly, which he assumes are leeches. It's another genius scene, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, see, we're going to go to a clip here because they're on their way home, but the kids find their souvenirs just a little disappointing.
Oh, why did I get this Lego shirt?
Don't you mean Blocko shirt?
Right, Blocko shirt.
Lisa, how's your Eiffel Tower kit?
It's okay, but it's missing a piece.
Welcome to real life, Lisa. You can't fight City Hall, a.k.a. Blocko Land. So don't even try.
What kind of a thing is that to tell your children?
It's what I always tell them. I told them that twice yesterday. And then again as they were going to sleep.
I'm sure the gift shop will replace the missing piece.
You're right, honey. Hear that, kids? The Simpsons are going to Blocko Land!
Yay!
Nowadays, if you got a Eiffel Tower kit, it'd be two men and a lady.
Jesus.
I guess it doesn't have to be refined to those genders. It could be whatever.
Right. It's just three people.
Yeah.
One in the butt and one in the mouth.
That's right.
And two... Never mind. Okay. Another classic Homerism, I think, just the... Well, you can't fight City Hall, a.k.a. Blocko Land. But it's like the such disdain for Blocko Land. I think we're kind of tired of the Simpsons are going to jokes, but this one is hilarious because it's a nice callback to the beginning where the kids were very indifferent to going to Blocko Land, but then when Homer says it, we're going to Blocko Land, they're like, oh, cheer, excitement.
And they just
turn back around. Have you ever been to Blocko Land, a.k.a. Legoland? As a Bart mistaken.
I have not. I would like to go. I think it could be fun. I worried that it would skew a little young, but it seems like it'd be fun. Have you ever been to a Legoland?
When I was down in San Diego a few years ago, I would contemplate going, but that's kind of what it is. It's very much just for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are kind of like Bart and Lisa meh about Legoland.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe when we... do a live tour, Steve. We'll hit San Diego. Probably during Comic-Con weekend, we'll do a show in Hall H, which is the biggest hall at San Diego Comic-Con.
Of course.
Which fits like a couple thousand people, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have to like kink some people out.
Yeah, we'll probably have to like live stream it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, if the Padres are in town, Petco Park's not too far from the convention center. We might have to just... ask if the Padres are playing, like, can we just borrow the field today? So they'll probably have to cancel their game, so we'll have to probably do our show at Petco. Not the stadium, Steve, not the store Petco.
Right.
Which I would like to do a show in a Petco, because then we could see all the puppies and kitties.
Oh, that'd be
fun. And the fishes and lizards, bunnies.
Hamsters, mice.
Tarantulas. But what was I saying?
Legoland is for...
Oh, yeah. So I didn't go. Yeah.
I feel like the best part about going to Legoland would be visiting the gift shop, but I also feel like that would be depressing because everything would be really expensive.
And like Lego in general is kind of pricey.
Right.
They're not like a $3.99 G.I. Joe action figure. Steve, are G.I. Joe still $3.99?
They're not anymore. They're close okay. to like $10, but still.
Right. And so Lego's expensive as it is, but then... you know, if a Millennium Falcon is $100, which is probably more than that,
mm-hmm.
retail, it's probably like $200 at the souvenir store.
Yeah.
We have a couple like Lego stores that they aren't official Lego stores. They're called Bricks and Minifigs in our area. And you could go in and buy old sets and Legos by the pound. That's kind of fun.
That's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Because remember as a kid, like if you lost a piece, you were screwed.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I had one of those like Technic Legos of a car, and I specifically lost one piece, and it was crucial to the entire thing, so I can never like rebuild that car. Also, I was never a fan of Technic because you didn't get little figures. It was like too advanced, you know?
Yeah.
You'd be like 12 to make them.
And it felt like a model less than a toy.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of what Lisa's Eiffel Tower is, too. It seems more like one of the more model-y ones rather than the toy ones.
Yeah. Which I think they have Eiffel Tower Lego. You know, it's the more advanced, like, smaller pieces.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more challenging. Like, you'll see that or, like the Lincoln Memorial or the White House or the Mar-a-Lago as sets. They're fun. They're fun to put together. No, Mar-a-Lago would be a Duplo set. Something that Eric Trump to put together.
Yeah. Actually, just looked up Lego architecture because that's what it's called.
Yeah, that's it.
And the Eiffel Tower one, how much do you think that costs?
I'm going to say $59.99.
You're so close. Just add $100 to that.
$599?
Okay, buy a calculator. It's $159.99.
How many pieces?
Three.
Two guys, one girl.
321 pieces.
It should be $32 then.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. Also, I don't want to put the Eiffel Tower together.
No. Somebody already did. We don't need to.
Yeah.
So Homer does a U-turn over a medium and in the road, and they arrive back at Blockoland, where workers are disassembling the park and putting the pieces into boxes for overnight storage. Great joke. Homer confronts the man working the souvenir stand, but the employee holding a Blockoland cigar says, "Tough luck, pal," adding that the souvenir industry is too tough to fight. Homer reluctantly agrees and begins to walk away, but then he sees a look on Lisa's face and gets an idea. He offers the souvenir guy a little souvenir of his own, and he makes a fist, and it looks like he might like try and flip him off or punch him or something, but she opens up his fist to reveal a snow globe with his face and says Homer at the bottom. This touches the man, so he reaches into the box marked Missing Eiffel Tower Pieces, which means that they know that every set is missing the piece, and they don't bother. They just know that they're... And he gives Lisa the missing piece. This is great.
We're really in the phase of Homer, and like this episode, just like the jokes are left turn jokes, you know, with the I am a washing machine, do as I say. And then like this one too, like this joke of I've got something for you, then left turn with the snow globe. And then even in the car was like, you can't fight City Hall, aka Blockoland. So there's a lot of left turn jokes in this episode. So what do you think of that souvenir gag?
I think it's kind of fun just because the snow globe, I wouldn't have guessed that was what was going to happen, that he would have the snow globe of his own face. Like, that is surprising. So it made me laugh. It surprised me.
That should be a gift that they sell at Universal.
This
land.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. They stopped doing the Simpsons Legos, didn't they?
I think they have, yeah.
Because they only did, the Simpsons House and Quickie Mart. And that was it.
I think so.
Like there was so much more. You couldn't do Moe's? I would love a Moe's Lego set.
Mm-hmm.
God, that'd be... Well, all right. Design the Moe's Lego set. How would you... The figures and what's in it?
Okay, so I think the figures got to be Moe, Barney, Lenny, and Carl. And I guess you would throw Homer in there, too.
What about Sam and...
Oh, yeah. The Barflies.
I think... So that'd be 7?
Yeah.
Maybe... Yeah, because with the Simpsons one, the house you got, you know, the family. There's just mm-hmm. Homer, Bart, Lisa, Maggie, Marge. Abe wasn't a part of it, right?
No.
So you just had 5. I think you don't do Homer in the Moe set.
I think that's
because
fair.
You're supposed to already have Homer.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're stuck with, I don't think Lenny and Carl either. I think you're going to have the Barflies, Barney, and Moe.
So you get 4. That's reasonable.
4. I, well, 5. So it would be 1 more. So maybe Homer, maybe go back to Homer. But I want Lenny and Carl, too.
Yeah.
But no one will care about... when they did, like, the blind bag Simpsons figurines, there's Lenny and Carl, right? That was part of it. And Mo. I have to look, because I don't have many figs of the Simpsons. I don't actually have a Lenny or Carl or a Mo. I'm assuming they produce those. I'll have to look it up. We'll have to go to those Lego stores to see.
Yeah.
Spend $15 on a little Lego figure, because that's probably how much they cost. But yeah, I guess, that's what you want. You're going to have a pool table in there. You're going to have the love tester. So you have to like build those. That's fun.
Yeah.
Would you have like a flaming Mo cup?
I would. Also, I know that this is probably controversial because, you know, smoking is bad, but I feel like a Laramie cigarette machine would be cool.
Yeah. Also, I'd also like, I think, yeah, I would just have, but would you have King Toots like attached to it as well? Because they're not, are they attached? They're not attached.
They're not attached.
Okay.
But I would have the tower of bottles that's outside of Moe's.
Okay. Yeah. I almost wanted to have like the parking lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually like put the Simpsons vehicle park there.
That'd be cool.
And then like an accessible roof with like accessible toilet just in, you know, for that one episode. maybe have a back room in the bathroom where there's the last other figure is Shamu. So, which I like that one.
Yeah, that's great.
Moe's. That's the set I want.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I would, you know, convert it to the Cheers set. What? Cheers. I want a Cheers Lego set.
Oh, yeah.
They have the Friends apartments. They have The Office now has an official Lego set. The Cheers bar. That's like that or Frasier's apartment.
Exceed. Come on, Lego. Seinfeld set.
Yeah.
So yeah, all of our have it. Yeah.
All of our childhood loves of TV. I want a bridge of every Star Trek ship, you know, the Enterprise and the Next Generation. I want a bridge set of that.
Mm-hmm. The night courtroom.
Oh, you'd have the courtroom and then Harry's office as well.
Right. They would connect. Exactly.
Yeah. And then there'd be three sets. There's the Harry's office, then it's the courtroom, and then it's the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it goes. Yeah, yeah. This is perfect.
Yeah, because then you could like have all the characters once you got all the sets. So like Dan would be in the courtroom, Harry would be in the office, and like Bull would be in the cafeteria or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Call up Johnny Lego and tell him to
click.
All right, Steve. Lisa, thanks, Homer. You know, because you got the Back to the Simpsons to see the missing Eiffel Tower piece. And he responds that any friend of Marge is a friend of his, which is another very funny Homer joke. So on their second ride home, Lisa is happy with her model set, and Homer discovers that standing up for the little guy felt really good, so he's going to do it more often. And that he sees the Springfield police, ACAB, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beating Snake Jailbird with their clubs. Oh, that's not right.
No.
So he speeds towards them, causing Chief Wiggum and the crew to run away. It's like, just another funny scene. We're like, oh man, scram. Kind of like little kids seeing an adult or whatever.
Right.
Very funny. And then Snake calls him an idiot, explaining that they were just trying to beat out his shirt fire. Another just joke on this, like a shirt fire.
Yeah.
Homer replies that, well, his heart was in the right place, jerk. But before driving off, blasting debris into Snake's face, leaving him and his shirt still on fire.
Yeah, like, there's like four jokes in there that could have just been one. They just kept on building on it. I love it.
Yeah.
So back at home, Lisa thanks Homer once again, and he finds that another one of his kids needs help as well.
Thanks again, Dad.
Well, you're welcome, honey. Now, I'm going to spend the whole day helping schmoes with their problems. Got a problem, Bart?
The girl at school won't go to the dance with me.
Bart's got a girlfriend.
No, I don't. That's the problem.
Bart's got a problem.
Don't worry, son. I'll handle this. Come on. Why won't you go out with Bart?
He's a smelly, ugly dork.
Please. Ugly is such a smelly word. Who would you rather go out with?
Tommy.
Well, duh. He's breathtaking. But Bart has inner beauty, like you'd find in a rodent. And face it, you're no prize either. You wear braces, you dress like a kid, and you're not getting any younger. Take what you can get.
He's right. Grab something and don't let go.
I love Lisa just throwing shade at Bart. And another funny joke of just the kid, you know, kids teasing you about, Steve's got a girlfriend. But Bart just being like, I meant Bart, not Steve. I don't know what I said. Steve's got a wife.
I do, and I love her very much.
But Bart, like, that's the problem. I don't have a girlfriend.
Bart's got, like, got a problem.
It's just so fun seeing Lisa, like, bullying, teasing Bart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Homer, just in Bart's class, lusting over Tommy. I mean, he's kind of hot. But
I don't blame him. Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy, you're not going to go for Sherry O'Terry.
Mm-mm.
He's more of a, he'd probably date, like, Lisa. Not Lisa Simpson, but Lisa's friend Lisa, that played by Lisa Kudrow.
Oh, yeah. Because she's all popular and cool.
Yeah.
They'd be a real it couple.
Yep. Yeah. A real Travis and Taylor type of couple, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So Carrubble just allows Homer to come in and, like, who is he for? Just, I love he's just putting on, like, a little, like, raglan shirt or some backwards cap. Like, yep, he's young.
I'm a boy.
Well, Homer picks up Marge from a salon called Harry Shears, which, is this the first time seeing it, or have we seen Harry Shears?
I believe this is the first time.
It's probably my favorite store sign gag.
It's so perfect. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. She's disappointed that they wouldn't honor her coupon for two free streaks. Also, do we need to explain the Harry Shears joke?
I would hope not, but so Harry Shearer was an actor. He was in the movie Spinal Tap, and he was also in Wayne's World as the DJ.
Steve, look further down in your notes about other acting he's done.
Oh, also, he's made a few appearances on a show called The Simpsons.
Right.
Playing half the characters.
He's famous for playing Bart, right?
Yeah, we'll say Bart.
Anyway, so Homer's outraged by that injustice of two free streaks. So Homer goes to bat for his wife, and he enters the salon and knocks a magazine on the ground. When an employee offers some help, Homer comments that it's a nice place to have, and it would be a shame if a hairnet was hurled to the ground. He then hurls said hairnet to the ground, but just kind of slowly floats down to the floor, where he then unscrews a lid off of a jar of molding mud. The confused salon worker asks Homer why he's doing these things, and he tells him that they should either honor Marge's coupon, or a lot more lids will be unscrewed. And the employee says that it's impossible, but Homer offers some sound economic advice. In this clip, later at Moe's, Homer tells his fellow barmates about his recent acts of kindness.
I cannot streak that much hair. Think of the cost. I'd be ruined.
Oh, really? Boy, you weren't kidding. Your profit margins are razor thin.
You see, this is what I'm...
Wait a minute. $400 a month for loafer lightener?
But we must have it. It is the lifeblood of the industry.
You get the same results with a mincing gel.
But of course, I will save thousands. Thank you.
Oh, homie, I love them. I can't thank you enough.
The satisfaction of helping another human being is all the thanks I etc. And I gave that man directions, even though I didn't know the way, because that's the kind of guy I am this week.
Another left turn joke for Homer. The going, looking at the guy's finances.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a Schwartzwelder, just like, fuck it, I'm just going to be as odd as I can be.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what it's going to be. That's what I'm going with this episode. He was probably, I'm not saying like writer's block, but obviously I don't know the mentality of him, but just like, he's probably just like wrote down something and then erased the right answer and then wrote down something else. It's almost like a Mad Lib. This is like a Mad Libs of an episode that he wrote.
It feels like the jokes come first and the story and plot are secondary to all that, which is fine
to me. A lot of times we complain about that sort of episode structure, but if it's Schwartzwelder, and yes, we're very biased, I guess, because we're fans of his, so of course we're going to like it. You know, it's like a child, like, you see someone's kid do something that you find annoying,
mm-hmm.
but if it's your child, you think it's endearing. So what we're trying to say is Schwartzwelder is our father.
Thank you, Daddy, for this.
Please love us.
Please love us. So in that clip, it ended up with Homer saying, because that's the kind of guy I am this week. So there's a band that has its name inspired by The Simpsons called Fall Out Boy. They are pop punk from the early 2000s, and I don't like to judge other people's musical taste, so I will not say anything about them. In their hit single from 2005, Sugar We're Going Down, the lines go, "Am I more than you bargained for yet? I've been dying to tell you anything that you want to hear, because that's just who I am this week." And it's popularly thought that line, "because that's who I am this week," was taken from this episode and paraphrased.
I don't believe it.
Okay.
My favorite Fall Out Boy song is the hit 2016 song called Ghostbusters. Remember they did the Ghostbusters theme song?
Oh, yes.
And then Huey Lewis sued them.
And so did Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah. Their cover of Ghostbusters is, well, I won't be mean either. That's all I'll say.
They also did that wonderful cover of We Didn't Start the Fire from like 2002. From 2020.
Yeah, where it doesn't go in chronological order. It would be like 9/11 was sad and Taylor Swift's dating Travis Kelce and the Berlin Wall fell down. I'm not doing it to the tune of We Didn't Start a Fire. I didn't want to get sued by Billy Joel.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just random.
It's kind of like that. Yeah.
Things like
that just rhyme. It doesn't go in order like Billy Joel's song does.
Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's Got a Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Little Rock,
that's
Pasternak, Mickey Mantle, Kerouac.
No, that's the real song, Steve.
Oh,
maybe his doesn't. No, this is all like 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
Don't you say an ill word about the BJ man himself.
All right, here we go. Captain Planet, Arab Springs, Deep Fake Earthquakes, Icelandic Volcano.
What?
Oklahoma City Bomb, Kurt Cobain, Pokemon. Tiger Woods, MySpace, Monsanto, GMOs. Harry Potter, Twilight, Michael Jackson dies. Nuclear accident, Fukushima, Japan. More war in Afghanistan, Cubs go all the way again. Obama, Spielberg, explosion, Lebanon.
What did Spielberg explode in Lebanon?
That's what it says. Trump gets impeached twice. Polar bears got no ice.
That's a shirt.
Sandy Hook, Columbine, Sandra Bland, and Tamir Rice. ISIS, LeBron James, Shinzo Abe blown away. Peace.
I'm sure LeBron James likes to be next to the word ISIS.
Yeah.
Anyways, Steve, Lenny walks into the bar complaining about the lousy isotopes, calling them a disgrace to baseball. Since we were talking about baseball, you said Mickey Mantle, that, right? Okay. So he goes on to say that the team has been terrible since they were purchased by the cheap, heartless Duff Corporation. Lenny then orders a Duff, and much like fans of Lizzie McGuire, comments that he enjoys that sweet Duff. Carl's surprised to learn that Duff owns the isotopes, but Mo explains that they bought the team from the Mafia a year ago. He laments that it was the last of the family-owned teams, and Lenny tried to return his season ticket, but they wouldn't give him his money back because, as they explained, they wanted it. Homer is eager to help, but Lenny is surprised. Mo offers that he's a new Homer, and Carl adds that he's wonderful.
So Homer goes to the Duff Stadium, and he goes onto the field looking for a refund for Lenny's ticket. He asks the equipment manager if he's at the executive office of the ball club, but the man says that it's actually the equipment shed. Homer points again, asking if that's the executive office, but he's again pointing to where they keep the water heater. He points once more, but the man stops him, saying that that's a tractor. So Homer then pays visits to the office of H.K. Duff the Eighth, the owner of the isotopes.
Sir, we can't give your friend a refund just because the team is losing.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Spin that back to where it was.
Yes, sir.
This meeting is over.
Okay. So, you want to go get something to eat?
No, I don't. Get out of here. No, no, not that door!
Albuquerque isotopes? What is all this stuff?
It's not anything. Huh? It has no purpose.
What a crazy room. There's no Albuquerque isotopes. It's the Springfield. Oh.
No, no, there's no O.
You're moving the team to Albuquerque, aren't you?
No, no, we would never abandon our loyal Springfield fans. By the way, all this barging into rooms marked private must have made you thirsty. Would you like a beer?
Well, okay. But you can't silence Homer Simpson. I'm the friend of the downtrodden, and I'm not going to forget what I saw here today.
Before we play the clip, you were talking about how he just like shows up to the stadium. And another just dumb Homer moment, but assuming that the equipment shed is the CEO's office.
Mm-hmm.
And then pointing to the water heater and then to the tractor. So good. And then I think my favorite thing he does is after H.K. Duff tells him to leave, he's like, all right, do you want to get something to eat? Like, to a complete stranger. I just think that's the funniest, ballsiest move. Like, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a job interview the other day, and, you know, after the interview was over, right? I just wanted to say, all right, do you guys want to get something to eat now? Just how funny would that have been?
I think it's a great power move, like when they say, do you have any other questions? Yeah, do you want to grab some food? So good. That's Stacy Keach playing H.K. Duff, and that's his first role on The Simpsons, but not his last. He also appeared in the season 14 episode Old Yeller Belly, which we reviewed in our 231st episode, and then he showed up in season 26 for Waiting for Duffman, and season 28 for Havana Wild Weekend, our episode 168, and he was also in season 26 again in Bart's New Friend, our 58th episode. So Stacy Keach kind of is like a lesser, I don't want to say lesser, but a different A. Brooks, because he shows up in all these different roles and we just don't even think about it, but there he is again.
Hmm. I like Stacy Keach just fine as an actor, but his mom though, have you ever seen his mom? I mean,
it's kind of going on.
Yeah, Stacy Keach's mom has it going on. Dumb. Speaking of emo bands, like we were talking about Fall Out Boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Fountains of Wayne. Their first album was great. No one heard it. Mm-hmm. And then they made that song, Stacy's Mom. It's not that as good as their first album. But it was their hit. So.
Yeah, it's a shame because I think they're a very good band who kind of got maligned because of that one song. Like,
yeah,
a lot of their other stuff is so much better.
It's like Cake, right? With Short Skirt, Long Jacket. Mm-hmm. Or although I do like that song.
Yeah.
What was Cake's like other big hit? Or like Beck with Loser, right?
That's a good one. Because his catalog is so diverse and so good.
Yeah. But when you say Beck, oh yeah, Loser, it's like, no, he's more than a loser, Steve.
Yeah.
All right. Well, H.K. Duff buzzes the intercom requesting Duffman to bring in two bottles of smooth, untainted Duff. Duffman arrives with two fresh cans, not bottles, of beer. And Mr. Duffman tells Homer that they've developed a new additive that makes beer super, super malty. And he offers Homer some, but is suspicious and worried that it'll erase his memory. And H.K. Duff assures him that it won't, just as then Duffman shoots a needle into Homer's arm, causing him to pass out. H.K. Duff takes a sip of beer, comments on how malty it is, and adds that Homer will never know. And then Duff and Duffman share a sinister laugh.
Another great, unexpected joke. Just the fact that Homer will enjoy it. This is so good.
And Homer, like, stating, like, it's probably going to knock me out and it's poisonous or whatever. No, just did the needle.
So in the backyard of 742 Evergreen Terrace, Homer lies on the top of a doghouse, a la Snoopy, when Bart comments, good grief. Homer wakes up complaining about his head hurting, and he then learns about his unconscious state and then puts the pieces together.
How long have I been out here?
All night. You were yelling at the swing.
I was, but I love the swing.
Dad, you were nuts.
You know me. Occasionally, I'll be quirky. Albuquerque! I'll be right back! Members of the media, thank you for coming. The proof that the isotopes are moving to Albuquerque is right behind this door.
Excuse me, Joel Duffman, the Newsly Times. What's with the smear campaign against this beloved brewer? And weren't you once in a loony bin? Oh, yeah.
He's right, folks. The only story here is the rich, smooth taste of Duff.
Yes, that is an important story. But so is this!
Well, I think I know tomorrow's headline. Local man is liar.
That is a good headline.
There's a lot of jokes in that minute of info. Homer being like, I love the swing. I wouldn't yell at it. And then Bart saying that he was nuts and saying, yeah, sometimes I'll be quirky. All but quirky. That's just great.
I love the Snoopy reference.
And then
it's funny because Snoopy doesn't sleep in the doghouse. He sleeps on top of the doghouse, Steve.
That's pretty fun.
That's the joke. Yeah, it is pretty funny. Also, the whole time when you say Albuquerque, all I can think of is the Weird Al song, Albuquerque. It's a great song. Look it up on Spotify. That's let them know that you listened to it and Weird Al made 12 cents from it. Or less. Probably less.
Yeah. Also, the when he opens up the door, it would be easy for them to just like have the room be empty. But the fact that there's a beatnik with a trumpet to go the wop wop is just so much fun. H.K. Duff saying that Homer was in a loony bin is, of course, a reference to Start Raving Dad, the episode that we can't talk about anymore.
Why? I don't want to beat a dead horse, but there's so many other episodes that they could also, quote unquote, cancel.
Yeah.
But like, why? I understand Michael Jackson, like, you know, what he did. Horrible, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still playing. They're still playing his songs on the radio.
Yeah.
Cosby, he's a heinous man. They still show reruns of Cosby on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still showing episodes of Bob Ross, you know, on PBS. And we know what he did.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible. Horrible. All those people.
One and the same. All three of them.
No, but like, just put it back on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have another bit of trivia that I would like you to confirm or deny. Because the internet told me this, and I don't know if I believe it. So Homer's attempt to alert the press of the move by showing them a room of evidence only to find nothing incriminating to be found, they're saying is a reference to the film Moonraker, in which Bond discovers that Hugo Drax is operating a secret lab and making a deadly nerve gas.
You're not reading this, right? This is coming from your memory.
Exactly, yes. So when Bond takes the MI6 chief and Sir Frederick Grey to investigate the lab, Bond finds that it's been replaced with, let's say, Drax's study.
You know, I don't even remember the name Sir Frederick Grey, but I'm glad you did.
Oh, of course, you know.
Yeah, that scene happens, and because Bond discovers the secret lab, and then he goes tells Mommy and Daddy about it, and yeah, it's then they open the door, and it's like his like giant office. Did Bond invent that bit? Because I feel like I've seen that bit in other TV shows or movies.
Yeah.
Is it? It's probably from an old book, like the Bible. Didn't like, you know, the Jesus when he's resurrected in that cave, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, I swear I saw Jesus in there. They opened it up, like, no, there's no one in there.
It's just a study.
Yeah. Jesus there reading a book, doing his tax reports. I don't know.
Yeah. Playing solitaire on his computer.
Yeah. He's got the new Apple VR headset on. Yeah, there was like even an episode of Quantum Leap that did this bit. I remember that. I don't know. The internet is just dumb. Don't listen to it, Steve.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do the reporter saying, hey, that is a good headline.
Yeah. And Duffman is the reporter, Mr. Duff or whatever it was. Yeah. Well, in an interview with Kent Brockman, H.K. Duff assures Springfield that the isotopes are not moving to Albuquerque. So when Kent asks if Duff is calling Homer a liar, he shows footage of Homer with his pants on fire, which is another funny scene. Like, what we do have is a video of him with his pants on fire. I wish the cops were there to beat the fire off his pants.
Yeah.
Homer states that he doesn't mind being called a liar when he's lying or about to lie or just finished lying, but not when he's telling the truth. And Homer and Marge is sure what the next move should be, but Lisa offers some ideas of her own.
Yeah, but what can you do?
There's all kinds of ways to get the public on your side. Bob Dylan wrote songs. Cesar Chavez staged hunger strikes.
That's it! I'll go on a hunger strike!
Only you couldn't keep up a hunger strike. You eat while you brush your teeth. You're eating a huge sausage right now.
So, I can stop, and I will stop. I'm on a hunger strike starting right now.
Marge's line of, like, she's thinking of the joke, much like when we think of something funny over her head before we get out. I mean, the, you know, the pre-laugh before she can make her punchline. It's so fun. Marge was having a good time with her.
Yeah.
Husband's expense. But, you know, I know he's going on a strike. Just finish the sausage because no one's going to eat that.
Right. You're
just going to throw it away. Those animals that sacrifice their parts for that sausage goes to waste.
Mm-hmm.
At least just finish it, Homer.
It's 30 seconds either way, so you might as well start it full.
Right.
But Homer looks at the half-eaten sausage on the ground and begins to whimper and cry. So he sticks his fist in his mouth in anguish, but then he kind of enjoys the taste of his own fist.
Would you enjoy a fisting, Steve?
Oh, yes, I would love a fisting.
Well, back at Dove Stadium, Homer chains a lawn chair to a light post with a sign that says, "Hungry for the Truth." He challenges those double-A baseball honchos to ignore him. Marge asks if he's really not going to eat anything, and Homer vows that his hunger strike will not end until Duff admits that they are moving the team. He then chains himself to a chair, and Lisa's proud of her father and offers an inspirational book to help him. The book, of course, is Mike Farrell's Core Beliefs. Homer skims the book of MASH co-star and learns that Mike Farrell really hated Wayne Rogers, who portrayed Trapper John.
Who doesn't hate Wayne Rogers? Probably Al.
I mean,
maybe Loretta Swit too. Jamie Farr hated
Wayne Rogers. I never saw the movie MASH.
Neither did I. I know it's supposed to be good and different than the show. So
yeah,
might be worth checking out. Maybe we'll do it on the Patreon.
I don't know.
That's fine.
I just also don't like MASH. I've never actually given it a chance, but we've had this discussion before, but like reruns, MASH was always on before like Cheers. You know, it's like, I don't want to watch this. Just get to Cheers.
Yeah. And I think we've also discussed this, but Futurama kind of made fun of it perfectly with like the robot that was like maudlin and then jokey, because that's to me what MASH is. I know it's a well-renowned, respected show, but it always seemed like not know what its tone was. Is it going to do bad Groucho Marx impression, or is it going to be a sad, harrowing drama? Like, it's a weird tone show.
Now, I would watch MASH and do a podcast about it if I was paid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't a Patreon idea or anything. It's just someone comes to us and say, hey, we're going to give you money to review all 11 seasons of MASH and maybe after MASH and all of the other spinoffs. Then I'd say, yes, I'll watch MASH and review the show, yeah, but sure. I'm not going to do it for fun.
That's right. So Marge gives Homer a big kiss and Dr. Herbert Stumber should he feel weak. Homer is assured that Duff won't allow him to waste away to nothing, but Bart points to another chair chained to another light post. In it is the skeleton of a woman next to a sign that reads, "Clean the ladies' room." It's so extreme. So much fun.
Just like a simple thing that they should be doing.
Exactly. So as the day goes on, Homer tries to bring his cause some attention by shouting out to baseball fans such as Kirk and Milhouse Van Houten. And later that evening, he sees Edda Krabappel enjoying a post-date ice cream cone with one Seymour Skinner.
What a great ball game! Thanks, Weekend Dad!
Stop calling me that.
Hey, kid and man, don't support a team run by liars.
Liars?
They're secretly planning to move to Albuquerque.
That's crazy! It would have been on a talk radio show like Sports Chat or Sportzilla and the Jabberjocks.
Yeah!
Why, you little... Oh, so hungry. Can't give up. Must continue fighting evil corporation.
Oh, Seymour, you shouldn't have. It's gonna go straight to my thighs.
Well, it just might have some company.
Oh, Seymour...
How fun is Milhouse in the scene?
So much fun. Weekend Dad.
But just like the, yeah.
Yeah.
And Homer knows Kirk and Milhouse well, but calls them man and kid.
Hey, man and kid. So funny.
I like it when the Simpsons characters don't use the person's name. They act like they've never met them before.
Mm-hmm.
Much like how Mr. Burns never knows who Homer is.
It makes sense. I mean, Springfield's a small town, but it's not that small.
Would it be like the size of Letterkenny, 5,000 people, and these are their problems?
I think so, yeah.
I'd assume, yeah, I think it's, there's probably an answer to how many people live in Springfield. I think Steve is literally looking it up right now, but.
About 40,000.
Oh, so a little bit more than 5,000.
Yeah, about 8 times more.
Yeah. All right, Steve, figure out what the equivalent of like a city that has 40,000 people in it. That's in Oregon, because we know Oregon. I know our fans don't, but then we'll figure it out. So we know, but then they won't know. Like, how about the actual town of Springfield, Oregon? How many do they have in there?
Yeah.
Steve, look it up. Okay, well, Edna throws her ice cream cone over her shoulder, and it lands squarely in Homer's face. Homer says, "Nice try, God," and tells the deity that he doesn't give in to temptation that easily. And just then, his hand forms in the shape of a fist and tries to eat that ice cream cone, but Homer slaps it away. I also love how Homer thinks God is trying to punish him with the ice cream.
Yeah. Both Corvallis and Springfield have about 60,000 people in there in Oregon, but you figure that's modern time and people, you know, cities grow. So you figure 35 years ago, 40,000 is probably pretty reasonable for, you know, Springfield in the Simpsons land. So that would make sense for Springfield, Oregon, or Corvallis, or even Albany or Tigard.
All right. Corvallis is a college town, kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the Oregon State is at, the Beavers. Mm-hmm. So just think of Beavers when you think of Corvallis.
That's right. Also, going back a little bit, Skinner's comment is a little randy. When Krabappel was like, oh, this ice cream cone is going to go straight to my thighs. And he was like, maybe they'll have some company. It's pretty horny for Seymour.
They're going to Bone Town.
I think so.
He's going to Corvallis, Steve, where all the beavers are at.
Exactly. And, you know, Krabappel will be the only thing enjoying licking something. Because she had an ice cream cone that she was licking in.
Oh, right.
Skinner's going to perform analingus on her, presumably.
Ah.
Or analingus, I don't know. Maybe both, hopefully in the right order. Anywho, at the Simpsons dinner table, Maggie loosens her diaper to make room for more food while Marge offers Bart more meatloaf. Marge says that they all have to pitch in and eat their father's share of food. And Lisa asks why Marge doesn't just cook less, but Marge adamantly says that she doesn't do things that way. So at the park, it's day two of Homer's hunger strike, and he begins to sing for the crowd.
Dancing away my hunger pangs. Moving my feet so my stomach won't hurt. I'm kind of like Jesus, but not in a sacrilegious way.
Jeez, Homer's losing it already.
Yeah, but his weary shuffling makes my heart smile.
Oh, I'm so hungry.
His tummy sounds angry, Daddy.
Yeah, that's his stomach eating itself.
It's such a beautiful day. Where are the crowds?
Duffman is thrusting in the direction of the problem.
People seem to be drawn to that kook. Maybe we can exploit him.
No, it's too dangerous, sir. He knows about Albuquerque. Duffman is a cautious cat.
No, listen. Fans love wackos. Remember that busty woman who ran out on the field and farted at the ball players? Mm-hmm. I think we found our newest attraction.
Do you think Schwarzwelder had to submit that fun song, Dancing Away My Hunger, to ASCAP so he gets royalties on that? Because obviously he wrote this episode, so I'm assuming he wrote the song.
Well, you'd think that, Craig, but you'd be wrong.
What?
That's right. That song was completely ad-libbed by Dan Castellaneta himself, so he thought of it.
And the royalty checks just keep coming in.
Oh, yeah. Every time that's played on Top 40 Radio, which I assume is daily,
yeah,
Dan Castellaneta gets a check. Also, the other feature, the busty woman who farted on the players, it's so silly. So
there is a time, like in the 70s, there was this lady who was famous for streaking and who had really big boobs, and she would streak at like sporting events, and it was kind of like a thing that people like enjoy. I mean,
because
she would go up and like no one like tackled her. Like now they would, like she would go up to baseball players and then like kiss them too, which of course, you know, you shouldn't do that because of consent.
Right.
But I don't think these baseball players from the 70s really mattered if a busty woman, topless busty woman, came up and kissed them. But yeah, so like, the left field choking just and farted on them. Well, Duffman says in the third person that he has a bad feeling about this, but H.K. Duff tells him to can it, Sid, in his normal voice. Duffman then invites Howard Duff to can it himself. I'm not a big fan of Duffman. We're not really in this podcast, but I love it. Just goes back to normal.
Yeah.
Normal voice is great. Well, it's day three, Steve, and Homer is fast asleep as workers saw the light post he's chained to and drag him from outside into the stadium, into the outfield of the ballpark. He wakes up confused, and one worker tells him that it was an order by Mr. Duff and offers some advice, pointing out that if someone hits the home run, the fireworks will just shoot off from either side where Homer is sitting. Just then, someone does that, and Homer is deafened by those fireworks.
So over the PA, the announcer introduces a real super fan, Hungry Homer. Hey, that's the title of the episode. The announcer tells the crowd that Homer is on a hunger strike until the Topes win the pennant. The audience cheers, but Homer shouts that he is there for a different reason. He then tries to warn people about the team moving to Albuquerque, but the announcer just claims to hear, "Go Topes!"
Well, Homer is upset that he has all his hunger for nothing. He hears a vendor offering fat, juicy hot dogs, and then another vendor selling pork chops and applesauce, and a third who provides crispy Peking duck. You know, just like all sporting events have that.
Mm-hmm.
So much like the USA Network to Jason Alexander in 1994, Otto tells the duck man to come on over to him. Homer sees the bus driver chow down on the poultry and sees all the other attendees enjoying some food and asks if they have to chew so loud. And then it's on day 7 and Homer sees that he's wasting away going down to a B cup. And Marge wonders when the Duff Corporation will put a stop to this madness.
It's been a whole week. Why are you letting my husband die? What does it have to do with baseball?
Death is a part of baseball.
Oh, yeah, the main part.
Guys, we won't let any harm come to your husband, Mrs. Simpson. He'll be fine.
He's not moving.
He's probably resting from all the moving he did before you got here. He'll start moving in a second. I'm sure of it. Turn on the sprinklers. You see there? He's fine.
Ooh, look at him go.
This is like the CEO or the execs. Like, yeah. Death is a part of baseball. The main part. All around fun.
Yeah.
clip.
It's really good. So Homer complains about being so hungry on day 9, wondering why he keeps on starving himself. He sees a discarded pretzel on the ground and reaches for it. Just then, a translucent figure in a suit steps out on the pretzel. Homer asks who the man is, and he says that he is the spirit of Cesar Chavez. Homer asks why he looks like Cesar Romero, and the spirit politely tells Homer that he doesn't know what Cesar Chavez looks like. Cesar Chavez / Romero tells Homer not to give up, even though he really wants to.
Again, another great joke is they have many clips of Homer, you know, talking to some historical figure. But the fact that he wouldn't know what Cesar Chavez looks like. And it would have been funnier if it was Cesar Romero, but as the Joker.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Up in the stands, a Duff employee points out that Homer is talking to himself, and another worker adds that his smell is distracting the center fielder. And HK Duff agrees that the situation is getting sad and decides to bring Homer in. As they take him away, Homer asks if he crushed the corporation, but Duff tells him that he's being replaced. The announcer then welcomes his replacement, Paint Drinking Pete, a shirtless tubby man in tie-dye pants and a paint bucket on his head, saunters into a Homer spot. He then chugs a can of blue paint and falls on the ground convulsing in pain. H.K. Duff leads Homer to a microphone so he can address the audience.
Well, Homer, your hunger strike lasted 12 amazing days.
Me so hungry.
Of course you are hungry, hungry Homer. So why not break your fast with our brand new Isotope Dog Supreme?
Oh, so hard to resist. Mesquite grilled onions, jalapeno relish. Wait a minute. Those are Southwestern ingredients! Mango lime salsa? That's the kind of bold flavor they enjoy in Albuquerque!
He's right!
Yeah, and a rapper says Albuquerque Isotopes.
Homer was right! They're planning to move the team!
No, see here, people. Let's not be too hasty.
Tell the truth! Come on, everybody!
Tell the truth!
Get him out of here!
I feel love that the ruse was ruined because of a hot dog and its toppings.
The fact that they were just already using the Albuquerque Isotopes wrappers.
Exactly.
And no one noticed. Springfieldites are dumb.
Yeah. So I alluded to this last week, but the concept of the Isotopes moving from Springfield to Albuquerque inspired the name change of the Albuquerque Isotopes, which is actually a AA baseball team, because they moved from Calgary to Albuquerque in 2003, and they had a vote, and they voted for the Albuquerque Isotopes. But here's the weird thing. The Isotope Stadium in Albuquerque is on Cesar Chavez Avenue, so it all...
Wow.
The Simpsons predicted it all.
Now, Steve, who's the affiliates... The Major League Baseball team that the Isotopes are affiliated with. Do you know?
Well, we all know it's the... I don't want to ruin it for you, Craig, so...
I'll tell you then. It's the Colorado Rockies. which is in Colorado.
Ah, yes. So Duffman goes to grab Homer, but Homer stops him, telling to stand up for the little guy just for once in his life. Duffman looks at his boss, and then back at Homer, then his boss, then back at Homer. And Duffman says that new feelings are brewing in him, and then asks, "What would Jesus do?" Which was a popular phrase at the time. He then picks up H.K. Duff, spins him over his head, and throws him into the stands. The crowd cheers and chants to Homer to eat, eat, eat. So Homer enjoys his Southwestern hot dog and tells the crowd that the truth never tasted so good. Homer runs as people in the bleachers throw snacks at him while he catches them in his mouth. And that would be the end of the episode if you watched it in syndication. However, originally and in streaming, it is not.
That's because we go to an office decorated in Southwest motif, and a man turns on a TV stating that the town has too much spirit. So he then says that he'll have to steal some other baseball team. He asks his assistant to find out what Dallas wants for the Cowboys, and the assistant tells him that the Cowboys are a football team. But the man states they'll play what he tells them to play, for he's the mayor of Albuquerque, and it's like menacing his eyes. And you think it's like dun-dun-dun, but that's how it ends, Steve.
That's our episode. Man, I think that this episode, I don't want to say my rating, but it might be a home run. But let me think about it. Let's take a break and we'll come right back to talk about it. We'll be right back. Alrighty, Craig, we're back. Let's finish up our discussion of Hungry, Hungry Homer. We'll talk about what made us laugh, what we thought about the episode, and just our general thoughts, and what we're watching next week. But before we do all that, it's always nice to, share the gift of gift giving. And so I wanted to give you something from this episode that I thought you might enjoy. You know, this episode started in the wonderful land of Blockoland, so I got you a Blockoland, not Lego, t-shirt, along with a ham apple and a missing Eiffel Tower piece, but no Eiffel Tower.
Well, I got a couple things for you, Steve. Oh, thank you, by the way. I figure, I was at Blockoland as well, and I thought, what would Pink Floyd give Steve? And I thought, here you go, Steve. You would have a cigar, so here's a Blockoland cigar.
Ah, very nice.
And then also, here's the deed to this podcast. As you see, we are relocating to Albuquerque to do the podcast from there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You're not happy about that?
No, I like it. Albuquerque is lovely this time of year, so this is going to be great. We all saw Breaking Bad. We know how great that city is.
Oh, yeah. And then we'll go to the Walter White House, and the owners will be so nice to us. We'll get to go throw pizzas on their roof and just walk around the house. You know, that's how accommodating they are, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. Walter White House, like, is he the president now?
President of meth.
That's right. Speaking of meth, Craig, what did you think of this episode? What made you laugh?
Just this episode?
Just this episode. Like, what were the jokesters, the things that made you go, ha, 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 ha?
Stacey Keach degraded as H.K. Duff. I thought that was a lot of fun character. And even Duffman didn't annoy me in this episode, which is a surprise. Especially when he's like, his name is Sid. That out-of-character trait, I mean, was fun. Lisa getting a little zinger with Bart, you know? Bart's got a boyfriend. Very funny scene. Marge even throwing Homer under the bus, giving her own little joke about his weight, was hilarious. And Homer all over the place in this episode. And Homer really was like, we're talking about MVJ, most valuable jokester, and we'd say, we'll throw it to this character. But Homer, I think, really is an actual MVJ in this episode, because the jokes were all left turn jokes. They're all just absurd, like such Schwartzwelder-y, such like, just reminds me of like the Conan O'Brien sense of humor, obviously, or Schwartzwelder sense of humor, but it's very much Conan-y type humor as well. Those are my favorite jokes. And sometimes, like we say, like they don't land that well, but I think it's because you have to craft the right joke, and I think Schwartzwelder is like that type of guy that can craft that kind of a joke. You know, I am a robot, do as I say, I'm a washing machine. Such fun lines, and Homer just got on the car ride to Blockoland, and I don't think there's really one quote is better than the other. Snake trying to they're trying to beat out his shirt fire. All fun jokes. How about you?
Yeah, I think that everything you said, I completely agree with. I think that H.K. Duff was a lot of fun. the other people in the stadium, like the reporters, and the beatnik with the trumpet, really funny. The Van Houtens were really good. Just, you know, Milhouse calling Kirk a weekend dad because at the time they were divorced. Kirk getting upset by because he didn't hear it on talk radio, which is kind of a good allusion to the type of person that he will later become. But even in the beginning, the Blockoland commercial with the little boy being like, yeah, it was all right, I guess. And then you have like two very famous words from this episode, meh, which they'd used before, but this kind of solidified that word. And also Homer saying me so hungry is another one that we didn't mention, but that is another thing that came out from this. So I think that Homer is ultimately the MBJ because he had so many jokes that you didn't know where they're going. And just him talking about how he loves to swing and he wouldn't yell at it, or him sitting on the doghouse, or just the U-turn, and just everything about this is so Schwarzwaldian that it works so well. So yeah, I think Homer's my MVJ, but there are a lot of contenders. Even Marge saying that like he couldn't last a hunger strike because he eats while he brushes teeth isn't that solid of a joke, but it's a solid Marge joke. It's the type of joke that she would say.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is, you know, to review the episode, it's a short episode because you also have like a long intro.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels long. But when I mean long is like the pacing is like really well done in this episode. Like I got my 22 minutes worth. Like there wasn't a lot of filler, but there was like all of Homer's escapades of trying to help Bart or getting the Eiffel Tower piece, doing all those little things that, you know, ultimately like, you know, leads to, yeah, the isotopes and progressing that story. It just has a nice flow to it. And it was just a delightful episode to watch. I mean, I was laughing, and I wonder how I felt about this when it came out. Because
mm-hmm.
I feel like, I mean, I think Simpsons fans agree the later Schwarzwelder stuff isn't obviously as good as the earlier stuff. But that's, you know, like any writer. I have no basis in this because I haven't read them. But like, I imagine Stephen King's more recent novels probably aren't as good as his coked up early novels.
Yeah.
But that being said, I think, you know, if we look at some of those Schwarzwelder episodes that we have reviewed, like we find that we liked Kill the Alligator and Run, which we maybe didn't before, but like Simpson Safari, yeah, we don't like that one that much, you know?
Right.
So this one is definitely up there for a season 11 episode. Or 11 and beyond, what I mean. If I gave this a ranking, I'll talk about some of the other Schwarzwelder. So let's, the ones that we can review, you know, there's quite a list. I'm not going to read them all, but definitely You Only Move Twice is probably the top episode he's ever written, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's consensus for Simpsons fans. That could be also considered like the best episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So if that's the top, I would say that this episode for me is a controversial answer, but I say this is The Cartridge Family. That's how I'd rank this episode. Yeah. Now, some people like that episode or some people don't episode, but that's my left turn. It depends on what you think about The Cartridge Family, and that's how I think about this episode. So if you hate it, then you're going to hate this episode, right?
Yeah.
All right. How about you?
Well, Craig, yeah, we talk a lot about John Schwarzwelder and like how iconic he is and how much his humor helped The Simpsons become what they are. And I think that this episode is a prime example of what works. Just doing jokes for joke's sake. And, you know, we talk a lot about how sometimes the show in the later seasons don't have enough plot or enough heart. And this episode doesn't have a lot of heart, but it just, the jokes are so solid and so silly. And, you know, like, well, I'm even like going to look past the homophobic loafer lightning joke, or, you know, just some of the things that might seem outdated in today's purview, because the jokes that they write are so good and it's so, so damn silly and so unexpected that I think I watched this episode this week probably about 7 times, just because every time I'd get a new laugh and I just have something new to talk about it. So I don't want to compare this to like the golden age of Schwarzwelder. It's hard for me to say like what works in those and what doesn't work, but I just think that this on its own, just a really solid episode that had me delighted. It was a very well-paced episode, and the transition from Blockoland to Homer being a good Samaritan to the little guy to the whole isotopes thing. It just flows so well. And so I love this episode. You know, it started with Blockland, and we talked a lot about the Simpsons Lego set. And Lego House has 2,523 pieces. So if I had to give this a ranking out of 2,523, I'm going to give this, we'll say, 71006, which is the Simpsons item number, which is very high, which is where I give this episode.
High praise from Caesar himself, everyone.
Caesar Romero.
Chavez.
Yes.
He makes a great salad.
He does. All right, Craig. Well, that's what we thought of this episode, but what will we think of next week's episode? And, well, I have good news for you. It's a new one. We're back to season 35. And so, Craig, what do you think the title of next week's episode is? It's season 35, episode 11.
Well, this was based off of Hungry Hungry Hippos, very popular board game from the 1900s. So I think, I think it'll be fun. They're going to make another board game pun. So I think this episode will be called Chutes and Flanders.
That's a great name. Yeah. But sadly, that is not correct. But there is a character's name and then a word. So you're kind of there.
Yeah.
The title of the episode is Frankenstein's Monster.
So I got to come up with the plot of this. Well, it sounds kind of obvious. Frankenstein. It's obviously John Frink, writer on The Simpsons, comes to life. Professor Frink animates him, and he makes John Frink, the writer of The Simpsons, murder people in Springfield for fun. And the B story, Lisa and Bart want to Scrooge Maggie. So they show Maggie her past, present, and future.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a Christmas episode. Yeah.
Yeah. You're close. So Professor Frink secretly helps Homer land a high-level position at a state-of-the-art nuclear plant. But since Homer lacks the skills to actually perform the job, Frink comes to fear that he's created a monster. And in the B-plot, Maggie and Lisa Scrooge Bart.
More people need to Scrooge everyone, you know?
Yeah. Get Scrooged.
That sounds like a bad movie, Get Scrooged. Much like that bad Spirited movie. With Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell.
Oh, yeah. That was bad.
It's fine. How many weeks has it been off? Like 5, 6 for new episodes? Yeah. The last one was Christmas Eve of 2023. Wow. And it's like we're coming up on, what was this, February? What's the next big holiday? Because we, this episode's what? This episode drops on Valentine's Day, right? Hey, give your lover the gift of this podcast.
That's right. I want to break up with them.
Yeah. I guess the next big holiday would be St. Patrick's Day. So this is right. Yeah. Leap year. Is leap day count as a holiday, Steve?
I don't know. It should.
Yeah, but I'm just saying I'm excited for New Simpsons.
Me too.
Be fun to get the old gang back together.
That's right.
The Homer, the Bart, the Maggie, the Burns, and the rest.
Your Mole Man and your old Jewish man and your Duff man.
That's all I could ask for.
Yeah. And we also can't wait to get back to you and hear from you, the listener. So if you want to reach out to us, you can always email us at 13simpsons@gmail.com or go to the socials like Instagram or Threads or YouTube at 13simpsons.
Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to this podcast, and leave us a 5-star review or the equivalent. Because it will help us get more listeners. But you don't have to write a real review. Just tell us what you would hunger strike for. And, Steve's talking about contacting us. You can also contact us on voicemail. You just go through the show's notes, and there'll be a little button that says leave a voicemail. And simple as that. Click on the button and drop your voice. We'd like to hear your voice. Ask us questions. Ask us whatever. Just make fart noises if you want. We want to hear from you.
That's right, we do. And hey, we also want to see from you some great swag that you're wearing that you bought from us, which you can do easily at tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys. We have t-shirts, stickers, and all sorts of great stuff with great prices and a whole variety of options. So check that out.
I will.
Yeah, you too, listener. And hey, thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
For this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And remember, I am a washing machine. Do what I say.
And death is a part of baseball. The main part.
Remember that busty woman who ran out on the field and farted at the ball players?